Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Save big money on your next project now at Menards. Update your home with low-maintenance vinyl windows from Jeld-Wen. They're durable, energy efficient, and are low maintenance. Menards carries over 100 different size and style options in stock, ready to take home today. Save big on Jeld-Wen windows now at Menards. And don't forget to check out our flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
Is gone from my sails, and no one's left to tell my tale. My ship has sunk, to my surprise. I can't.
Welcome to the Deconstructionist Podcast. I'm your host, John Williamson, and welcome to 2022. Very excited to kick off a whole slate of new episodes and new topics. We've got new guests and some returning guests coming back. Very, very excited to release all sorts of new content for you over the next handful of months. So before we get to that, I've got a very special guest this week. And if you looked at the title, obviously you already know. But before we get to that, I just want to say, to keep up on everything that is related to the podcast, check out our website, www.thedeconstructionists.com. There we've got a blog, we've got links to our social media. You can stream directly from the website our entire back catalog of episodes. You can link to our web store where you can buy everything from t-shirts, coffee mugs, pint glasses, and you can even link to our Patreon page, which helps helps us support all of the costs associated with the podcast. And we'll be retooling it this year with new packages and new exclusive content. So look out for that. And also the theme music that I've been using is provided by our friend Forrest Clay. If you want to check out Clay's songs, specifically the Recover EP, which a lot of the songs that we've been featuring are from that EP, you can find those songs anywhere good music is found. Having said that, I just want to say a huge thank you to all of you over the years who have supported the podcast, who have listened, who have sent emails in. It means a lot. And it's not lost on me that this is just a really special thing to be able to do and to be able to produce. And that people actually want to hear these types of conversations means a great deal. And so it's an amazing honor to be heading into the sixth year of doing this. Believe it or not, we launched this podcast with an episode discussing the topic of deconstruction and what that word really meant to us back in January of 2016. And so I started this with my friend Adam, and we had no idea what this was going to become and what it was going to evolve into. We have always said that the podcast more or less runs itself and decides what it's going to do, and we just kind of hang on for dear life. And so although Adam is not actively involved anymore, is still insanely supportive, and we talk weekly. So it still means a lot to both of us. So hopefully the podcast has evolved in a good way over the years and hopefully gotten better with time. We still cringe at our early episodes, but hey, you know, we were learning as we went along, and hopefully the podcast still brings folks out there some sort of comfort and value for all of you folks listening. So having said that, this week's guest is the man who I started it all with, Mr. Adam Narlock. So no, you didn't accidentally pull up an older episode. Actually, some weeks back, packed up all the gear. I drove over to Adam's house, joined him in his bourbon room, and we essentially re-recorded the very first episode that we ever did. We thought it'd be kind of cool to sit down and do a 2022 version of that very first episode. And, a lot of it is reflecting back on what deconstruction, as a term, you know, meant to us back then and what it's evolved to mean to us today, and how our journeys have kind of looked and evolved over time, and some of the ideas that we had back then that, you know, we no longer hold today. And so it was a fun way to kind of reflect back on the journey and kind of reflect on, you know, where we're at today. And just always a fun conversation with Adam. So had a blast. I hope you guys enjoy hearing Adam's voice again as much as I did when I was recording it. So I'll get out of the way now. And without further ado, again, welcome to 2022. Much more in store. This is just the beginning. Yeah. And so without further ado, I bring you Adam freaking Narlock.
'Cause I am helpless. This water I am treading is now my own. I'm afraid my time has come. I wish for one more time to see the sun.
Adam, would you like to do the honors?
Like the Welcome to the Deconstructionist podcast?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Welcome to the Deconstructionist podcast, everybody.
We are your hosts.
I'm Adam Narlock.
And I am John Williamson. And everybody's probably super confused right now.
Oh, man.
It's been a minute.
Oh, man. It's, yeah. First of all, for everybody that's listening, I need you guys all to know how much I love the man that's sitting across from me with this ugly ass Michigan sweatshirt on.
Hey, that's Big Ten champion Michigan.
Big Ten champion, yes. Michigan Wolverines, who totally deserve it because the Buckeyes were trash this year. Did not deserve to win that Rose Bowl. I will go on record. But it's just so good to be with you, John.
You too, buddy.
And with all of the listeners that I so recklessly abandoned and left in the lurch unintentionally, not knowing that that's what was going to happen.
Yeah. What? So tell folks a little bit about, like, because I try to do my best to explain, because we did definitely have some people who were like, where is Adam? Is he coming back? And I was like, okay. So
Adam's,
here's kind of what's
motherboard
going on.
Overloaded. And he needed an episode or two off, which turned into a year or two.
Yeah. But
and
like,
that's just how life goes, isn't it? Like,
yeah,
man, you're like, man, I was just like, okay, I can't do this one. Okay. I can't do this one. I'm just like work and kids and, you know, I'm just like totally stressed about everything. And that's prior to COVID.
Yeah.
And then COVID hits.
Like almost right after
and
that.
And we did talk about a couple times, like, I think you were going to like maybe try to drop some mics off at my house and like kind of figure out a way to get me in virtually. And
yeah,
again, COVID and like life. And yeah, before you know it, so much time has gone by and yet we're still us.
Yeah. I miss it, man. I'm not going to lie. I miss the moments where so people don't get to see what we, you know, obviously when we're recording, because I don't find releasing the video footage to be of any value, because it's basically us sitting in a room and then the other person distantly on the other, you know. So like, it's not like Joe Rogan who's got him in the same room, right? Like they're
right,
sitting across from each other.
And he's doing like cuts to other people in the studio and like got all these cameras.
Cool background.
And, yeah, absolutely.
But like, so people only get to see the joy on our faces, like when we have a guest who's really, you know, throwing out some good stuff and we're like high fiving in the background.
Oh man.
I definitely missed that. And, but yeah, you had
same
some,
dude,
lots of life stuff going on, you know,
lots of life stuff, you know, anybody that has a life can probably understand that the last couple years, depending on where you are in your life has been, a bit unpredictable and odd.
Yeah.
And stressful.
Yes.
And man, it's like, so I'm, you know, I'm 40 now.
Welcome.
Yes, I know. I made it. I made it to 40. And it's amazing how marriage and kids and deconstructing and faith journeys and work and all of that stuff. I think everybody can probably relate to the fact that life never gets less complicated, it always just continues its fractal expansion of complication.
Yes.
And every once in a while, you're just kind of like, so when it came to doing the podcast, yeah, man, I was just kind of running on fumes, not with just the podcast, but just kind of with life. And it became one of those things where I was just like anything else. Sometimes you need a break from working out. Sometimes you need a break from a hobby that you have, or, you know, when's the last time you've gone on a date night with your wife or your husband, or, you know, done something special with the kids. Like, sometimes there's just too much on the plate and things, you just get bumped off.
Yeah.
And I think I just didn't realize, how long that bump was going to be, or what was going to happen, or how the journey was going to unfold. But like, you have been doing an absolutely phenomenal job.
Oh, thank you, man.
So all you listeners you all know this, have been in very, very practiced hands.
You know, it's funny. There have been countless times where I'm like, should I continue to keep it going? And then inevitably there's somebody, because, you know, that's the way God and the universe works, like, who's like, hey, you know, that last episode really meant something to me. And you're like, okay, all right. You know, and I think we said a long time ago, if there's even five people out there who find value in this, then it's almost like, yeah, okay.
Totally, man.
Yeah. And there's still moments where
I remember when we used to say that.
Yeah. Yeah, do you remember what our expectations were when we sat down and we were like discussing like starting this podcast?
Okay, so since we're doing this live, like I'm going to do this in the perfectly honest way that I remember it, but then I want you to do it in the perfectly honest way you remember it. And
perfect.
I'm hoping it's going to be a little different, because that's how things should work.
Mm-hmm.
So I remember I was still a pastor at that church.
Yep.
And we knew that ourselves and a lot of the people that we knew were kind of secretly, maybe even shamefully, like reading Richard Rohr.
Oh yeah.
Or like still, they kept their Rob Bell books.
Yep.
Or like they were actually entertaining ideas that like maybe others would find, heretical or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And they were kind of having that like Phyllis Tickle called back then, like a garage sale of like idea, like kind of just rummaging through it and being like, I don't know about this. Like maybe I should kind of question this again, but like, am I allowed to? And we knew that we had like a small circle of friends in the area that would probably get that. And if we could just give them something to listen to and they liked it, and it was like, man, if like 50 people.
Yeah.
Like at the end of the first year, if like 50 people are into this and it's like
yeah,
meaningful for them. We also didn't know that we were going to be like a weekly or a bi-weekly podcast at that point.
Right.
Like we started like getting super overrun, but
yeah,
man, that was how low the bar was.
Yeah.
At first.
Yep.
That's how I remember it.
No, my recollection is almost exactly the same. I distinctly remember sitting down and we're like, okay, so like, what do we want this to be? What do we want the format to be? And that was long before we, you know, like use music during the episode. That was completely happenstance. You know, we had some theme music that we had this idea for theme music. Oh yeah.
Little drinky drinky.
Yeah. Adam and I are in his new home, in his, bourbon cellar.
I it's like a little speakeasy corner of my basement.
It's beautiful. I should post pictures of this if that's allowed. Yeah, it's beautiful. I wish this had existed when we were recording originally.
It's a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun.
But yeah, so I remember sitting down and saying like, look, if at the end of this year, because I think our original goal was one episode a month.
Totally.
And it was the two of us.
Yep.
And we researched, like, I remember reading like literally 20 books.
We had so, oh my gosh.
For the first episode. Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay.
That was, by the way, that was so much fun at the beginning.
Yes.
Before we ever had a guest.
Yep.
And you and I were literally just trying to plan out the first few episodes. And we got all these books, and you had a few, and I had a few, and then like a few more came along, and like we found some more.
Yeah.
Before we know it, like we're both reading Pete Rollins' Insurrection.
Yep.
and totally being like, what is this guy talking about? This is nuts.
I still remember our conversations about that.
I was so mad at that book, but I also like loved it.
Yeah, you literally, I remember you texted me one night. We were both reading it at the exact same time.
Across the room.
Yeah, you were like, I loved it, but then he would say something and I threw it across the room. I literally remember you saying that. And I was like, yes, I know what you're saying, because like there are parts of it that are very uncomfortable for
me. So good though. So good.
Amazing. And then did I give you your first copy of Falling Upward?
Yeah, it was a present. You love presents.
I do.
And you
I brought you some today.
You're so good at giving presents.
Oh, thank you.
And you totally for I believe Christmas that year. That's when we had dinner at my house.
Whiskey and Falling Upward.
No,
I think.
We had Trappist ales.
Oh.
We had those Rotford.
Yes.
And some other like aged Trappist monk ales, because we really felt like if we were going to drink alcohol and do a podcast about deconstruction, we needed to have some spiritual connection. So
yes.
Beer made by monks in a Trappist monastery.
Yeah.
Felt as close as you could get to God in alcohol.
I feel like that's true.
And they were wonderful.
Yes.
And you gave me Richard Rohr Falling Upward. And I had some knowledge of Richard Rohr, but I'd never read one of his books, and the love affair began. I was like, who is this beautiful, wonderful man?
Yeah. Yeah. What were like, that's a good question. So what were the initial books? Cause I know when we first met, you were, as you said, still on staff at the church that I was going to. And by the way, I don't know if you remember this, but I was told to hang out with you. Not one person, multiple people, and this is the way they described it. Oh, you like to talk theology and drink beer? You need to hang out with Adam. And I was like, yes, but like
best reputation,
oddly specific,
best compliment and reputation. Thank you.
Yes.
Thank you. Thank you.
If I could remember all the people that gave me that recommendation, I would send them a Christmas card.
Like, you want to get nerded out and get really excited.
Yes.
And talk about some crazy stuff.
And drink some excellent beer.
Drink some excellent beer. You should talk to Adam.
And I did.
And we did. And we went on a date night.
We did. We did.
And we talked about all the things.
And I remember we, by happenstance, because I was already, without knowing it, on this path of deconstruction. I was reluctantly dragged along to this
church.
And
I didn't know it.
Right. But what's weird is we were reading some of the same stuff.
Yeah.
And so what were some of the books that you read initially that kind of kicked it off for you?
So at that time, because you know, obviously with, you know, age and wisdom gives you some lenses to kind of connect dots to the past. Mm-hmm. And you usually think that where things began or where they began, and then you kind of get a little bit further out and you're like, oh no, it began like way further back than I even realized at the time. But at the time when you and I met, it was Richard Rohr. It was Marcus Borg. It was N.T. Wright.
Yeah.
It was
Pete Rollins.
I'd come across Tim Mackey through John Mark Comer, and was really, really digging his like super, super honest approach to scholarship that took him to a lot of places that rebuffed some of the kind of age-old assumptions built into Protestant theology and biblical interpretation. And there were just a lot. It was like I was starting to realize again how much fun it was to not know something.
Yeah.
I was starting to realize again how much better it was to invite people to a space where they could think and wonder and not feel like they need to get something right.
Yeah.
But kind of play. And that was happening to me as a pastor, which I was having trouble, to be perfectly honest, interfacing that, like in some sort of an official way, like in the, like, how do you do that? Like pastors are supposed to kind of have direction and answers. And even if they tell you like, it's, you know, it's okay to, you know, blah, 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 blah. They're not really creating the space for you to do that.
Right.
Like they may have like a wonderful open sort of like, oh yeah, it's great. And like, I love to, you know, talk, and it's okay that you're wondering. And that's great. It always kind of comes across a little bit patronizing.
Mm-hmm.
And it comes across patronizing because you see the whole artifice behind it. as not serving that function. So it always, even if you're allowed to question, it always feels a little out of place.
Right.
Like it doesn't belong, because everything that's informing the context around where you're sitting doesn't do that.
Right.
It does something else. It tells you how to live or how to think or how to, or what to think in the dangerous ways.
Yeah.
And I was reading a lot of things that were kind of just challenging my assumptions. I remember that one of the pastors that I worked with at the time knew that I was kind of readdressing some what should have been kind of locked in issues, and asked me kind of, where's this coming from? Like, you know, what are you reading? And I was like, N.T. Wright.
Yeah.
He's totally like messing me up right now.
Who's considered fairly orthodox.
Yeah. But like, if you actually read it, you're like, well, wait a second.
Some pretty good scholarship here. You know?
This is not what I was taught that it is with certainty and certitude. And so, yeah, like him and Walt Brueggemann and Karen Armstrong and John Caputo. And yeah. And then obviously I'm a philosophy nerd. So like, you know, I'm totally jamming out on like Kierkegaard and Hegel and Camus and all these other guys. And I was just getting into Zizek a little bit through Pete, because, you know, he uses him in footnotes, and I'm like, oh, who's this guy?
Yeah.
So yeah, man, lots of things. And then, you know how it's just snowballs. So what about you?
Yeah. It's funny, when we met, I had started the process, and you know me pretty darn well by now. And so my process for anything is just to research the hell out of it. And so,
oh, you love it.
Yeah. And so like, so I don't know what kickstarted it necessarily, because like we've talked about for years, like there are different things that kind of kickstart a so-called deconstruction or a spiritual journey. Sometimes it's traumatic, sometimes not. For me, it was
a lot of times it's traumatic.
Yeah, sadly. And I consider myself lucky in the sense that it wasn't traumatic. It was very much just seeking information and knowledge and trying to understand. And I think it was the birth of my daughter and the fact that I reluctantly kind of got dragged along to this church where, thank God, because I met you and a few other people who I consider great friends. And, you know, it was a wonderful experience, everything, warts included.
Yeah.
But I met you and can't ask for anything more than that. So, but I started reading books. And fortunately my dad, probably went through his deconstruction decades ago. Didn't know that at the time.
Who is an ELCA
Lutheran pastor. Yeah. Freshly retired.
Yeah.
This week. But he kind of put some stuff in front of me, and then I just kind of found some stuff. And so I don't know how I found, I do. I found out about Pete Rollins through a comedy podcast.
Oh, Pete Holmes.
Pete Holmes, yeah.
Yeah.
I think Pete Holmes for a lot, actually, because he did a series called Friends of Rob Bell.
Yes.
And not growing up in evangelical Christianity, didn't know who Rob Bell was.
You didn't?
No, nor did I know why it was such a big deal.
Because it's not.
Because it's not. So like everybody's like, oh, Rob Bell, Love Wins, and all this stuff. And I'm like, I don't know what you're talking about. And so I kind of systematically went through these books, and so read Richard Rohr, because you know Pete Holmes, said the book changed his life, and I'm like, okay, I'll check it out. So I read it, and it wrecked me in all the best ways. And
so
then
good. Falling Upward is what you're talking about, right?
Yeah,
yeah.
Mm. You know,
the amount of people that I have now had read that book,
I've given away all of my original copies. So like I just have a revolving, I just keep ordering new copies because I keep giving it away because I think it's that important. So like Richard Rohr, Insurrection, we found out we were reading at the exact same time.
Crazy.
Which is insane. Yeah. Synchronicity. Yeah. Marcus Borg, you know, reading the Bible again for the first time was one of the first books I read by him, and the work that he had done before this whole movement kind of kickstarted. So like just all these books, and was asking all these questions. And it's funny, you mentioned the fact that like pastors are supposed to have the answer. And I remember one of the first times, maybe the first time we hung out, I remember I was just like do you really believe that, you know, I was trying to, I was probably being a kind of a bit of a dick, you know, and you're like, and you were really gracious. And like later we had a conversation about that moment. You're like, I gave you total pastor answers. I don't even know why I said what I said, but like, you know, we were kind of feeling each other out probably, but we both realized very quickly that we were in a similar place and we joked about starting a podcast for forever.
Yeah.
So when we finally sat down, we were like, well, we'll do a podcast a month. And if at the end of the year, 100 people, 200 people listen to it, that would be a massive success.
Yeah, massive success. That would just mean that, like, okay.
Yeah.
We're obviously just going to do this anyway. Like, why not turn some mics on and invite people to... what I was kind of hoping it did is, like, whatever they're going through, if they could kind of, like, podcasting a lot of times is eavesdropping.
Yes.
And the beautiful thing about eavesdropping on somebody that is in a similar place that you are is it's an immediate antidote for shame.
Yes.
It's an immediate, like, washing you of, like, this, I'm not alone. Like, I've had these thoughts too. I'm in that place. I'm liking that. I feel validated. Like, those all just seem like really healthy things.
Yeah.
And so if we could just give somebody something to listen to that did more than pander or patronize, but it could actually, like, heal is probably too strong a word, but there's a healing component to being like, there's nothing wrong with me.
Yeah.
There's nothing wrong. Like, the only thing that's wrong is to not change.
Right.
Like, is that too...
Maybe. I think the desire was there.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Like, I don't think we necessarily had that as our, like, focal point. Like, our goal wasn't necessarily... I don't think we necessarily even knew what our goal was originally. I distinctly remember we knew that we were going through this and that perhaps others were as well.
Oh, and we had a lot of friends who were... listening to the Liturgist podcast.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
At the time.
Yes.
Which is the first time I ever heard the phrase deconstruction.
Really?
Was on the Liturgist podcast. Or maybe somebody was telling me about the Liturgist podcast.
Okay.
And I just knew as a pastor at the time that, like, the way they said it had all this, like, shame attached to it already.
Mm.
As this, like, you know, it's like, like, kind of deconstructing my faith, like, you know, like,
it's still a dirty word.
It's like a dirty,
yeah,
you know, whatever. And I'm like, well, that's great. Well, that's like how C.S. Lewis of you, like how Augustine of you,
yeah,
how Aquinas of you, how like how Paul of you, how like you're in good company, like,
yeah,
yeah, do that.
Oh gosh. Yeah,
it was like, no, like, you can't talk about it. Like, you can't, not here. And I'm like, well,
why not?
So you remember, like, the original name of our podcast was going to be Deconstructionists Anonymous?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Because originally we had...
But it was too long?
Yeah, we had actually started a Facebook page.
Right.
Under that name.
So it was like this whole, yeah, like, oh, we're going to Deconstructionists Anonymous where, you know, yeah, it's that place that you go in the basement. And yeah, you tell people that, like, you want to just keep exploring and that you're not settled and that you have questions and it's not resolved and you have actually some problems and some trauma and some pain and some, it's not always nice. And you got to, like, get that shit out.
Yeah.
Like, get it out.
I mean, we know for a fact to this day that there are folks who listen almost in secrecy. Like, I know for a fact,
oh,
Adam,
my gosh, dude.
I found this out. I won't say who, but I know one of the former bachelors from The Bachelor listens or did listen at one point. And then there are some, also some bands, but, like, you know, it's one of those things where, it's still not.
Do you remember that phone call that I got? Again, like, we'll be respectful.
Yeah.
Of that,
individual.
it was the pastor that wrote that worship pastor that wrote that mega hit worship song.
Oh yeah, 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 yeah.
That if you've gone to evangelical church in the past, however long, is you know, you've sung this song.
Right.
And it's a pretty good song.
Yeah.
And was like, hey, like, can we talk, you know?
I totally forgot about that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was like, we, you know, we listen to your podcast and some others, and we've got like our own little group that like does what you do, but like, you know, nobody knows. And like, by the way, can you not tell anybody? And I'm like, oh, buddy, like,
yeah,
that's so sad.
It is.
But like, take your time. Like,
yeah,
do what you need to do. There was a lot of anonymity needed for a lot of people, I think.
Which is fine, you know, and I think that comes along with kind of the unwritten rules that you and I came up with early on. You know, we were talking about this before we started recording. You know, we kind of made it a point where like, what do we want to be? And I think we sort of felt that out and figured it out as we went.
Yeah. Oh, 100%. Now it sounds like we had it all like figured out. Like we did
not at all.
No.
We broke every rule when it comes to starting a podcast, like things you should not do.
Should not do. And now you've probably helped so many people avoid so many mistakes because I know you've done some coaching pro bono.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I'm more than happy to offer up that advice. Like I've definitely talked to a lot of people about, here are all the mistakes we made, things you should not do when you start a podcast, but
have an idea of where you're going, right. Get some episodes in the can.
Right. Cause we had recorded one. And we're just so stoked to know that we had something out there in the universe.
And then like we got another one done and then we got some guests that just started saying yes.
That's a great story. So for people who just have started listening recently or within the last couple of years, Adam had this brilliant idea. He was like, look, so we had recorded our first like couple episodes,
maybe
I think
like two or three.
And Adam's like, you know what we should do? We should play the math odds and we should just reach out to like 50 people that we think are really interesting.
Yeah.
And maybe one of them will say yes.
Our bucket list.
Right. And we're like, you know, we'll play the odds. Yeah, one out of 50 will say yes.
A few of them.
And then we'll occasionally do an interview. Now, given we had no idea how to interview, we had never interviewed anyone, much less knew what kind of technology would be involved to pull that thing off because we live in Columbus, Ohio.
Oh man, we were clueless.
Doing this by distance. And so we did that. We emailed a bunch of people. And for the first like year, like no one said no.
Almost nobody said no.
And we were like, and there was zero reason for any of these people to say
yes. Was Karen Armstrong like our only no for like the first year?
And I don't even think she necessarily said no.
She doesn't do podcasts though. Right. So it wasn't like we're taking it personally. Like it's hard to find a recording of her.
It's true. She's on a couple documentaries and that's
Karen,
it.
I'm sorry, Karen.
Karen, yeah.
I'm going to always call her Karen because it's spelled Karen and I'm American.
Right.
But Karen.
Damn straight
Karen,
you are.
Karen Armstrong.
But yeah, like, so we had all these people saying yes who had no reason to say yes because we didn't exist as a podcast really yet. There was no benefit really to them coming on other than just doing it out of the kindness of their hearts.
Right.
And so, you know, I will always forever feel indebted to certain people like Rob Bell and
Tim Mackey,
and Pete Rollins and Tim Mackey and
NT
Alexander
Wright.
Shia, NT Wright. Like all those people who said yes initially.
Walt Brueggemann.
Yeah.
John Caputo.
Who just understood what
Krista
we were trying
Tippett.
To do. Yes. Yeah. And then, and then you know, we made a point early on. We said, like, we have a no debate policy. And the reason was not because we don't want to call people on their crap necessarily, but we were trying to give a platform to people who had less of a platform to begin with. So, like, conservative ideas certainly like had a stranglehold on kind of like media at that time.
Yeah, they're the loudest.
So we were like
the biggest outlets.
Yeah.
The biggest machines churning out content.
And you can find it everywhere.
We're pretty much like, you know, you're you know, they're the Lifeway. Lifeway,
yes.
Lifeway Christian bookstores. And nothing against these people. Like it's,
sure.
We want balance and, you know, all that kind of perspective and things like that. But like Christianity Today and Lifeway and, you know, mm-hmm. InterVarsity and Zondervan and like all that kind of stuff. It, great. But like, we really were trying to find some more, like the whole point was for the most part, if you're listening to a podcast like this, you've probably heard all that before.
Yeah.
We want to give you something that maybe you haven't heard.
Right. And I think part of that too was, I think we tried very hard to just let them present their ideas.
Yes.
Because we thought, here's something worth hearing, and maybe you haven't heard it elsewhere before, and we want to give them the platform and the space and make them comfortable enough to be able to share their ideas without feeling like they're going to be attacked.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, we made a no debate policy. We also made a conscious effort to make it feel like people were just tapping into, like, two or three people sitting at a pub somewhere.
Yeah.
Having an interesting conversation about interesting ideas. Maybe we don't necessarily agree with everything they say, but you wouldn't know because...
That's the point.
Yes.
That's the point.
Because it's up to you, who, the listener, to decide what you feel about those ideas. And are
or how it affects you right now, or where right. you're at on your journey. Like...
We've lost the ability to be okay.
It's gotten worse, man.
With not agreeing with everything somebody says. Because we've gotten to the point now where because we disagree with something someone says, then we completely tune out and we stop listening to everything they say.
Yes.
And potentially miss out on something really good. You know, like, I'm sure half of the things that come out of my mouth like are nonsense, but stick around long enough, and I swear to you, by accident, I'll say something worth listening to. And like, if
and
we
stick around
out,
long enough, and somebody's going to get the heart behind
right
whatever it is you're saying or trying to say or figuring out while you're saying. Mm-hmm. That's what a lot of people don't realize. Like, so much of discussion and content is literally people trying to figure it out.
Yeah.
It is the journey. Just because you write a book doesn't mean you're done.
Right. Or that you figured it out.
Right.
Like, the writing is the process of trying to figure it out, I think.
So, yeah, giving people space. And, like, I got to tell you, man, if there's one thing that I'm just a little bit worried about in the world, mm-hmm. not in the spiritual religious world, but just in the world and, you know, kind of what social media has done to how we function as human beings, is we've got this binary approach to everything now. Everything is dualistic. And if you... It's like, I'm going to present an idea to you in a tweet or on a Facebook post or in conversation. And I want to know if you're with me or against me right now. Like, I'm going to present an idea. I'm going to create a buzzword. I'm going to reference a famous figure or an event. And I want to know, what do you think? And I want your answer to sound black and white. I want you to either completely condemn it or completely celebrate it.
Yeah.
And nothing in the middle is okay.
Right.
And it's also not okay if you're trying to figure it out. You're not allowed to talk about it until you have figured it out and you're with it or against it. And that is probably the biggest sickness that I see becoming more and more endemic in American consciousness. The echo chambers are getting worse.
Well, it completely strips nuance out of being a human being. And it goes back to what we talked about 6 years ago when we first started, when the first time we had Richard Rohr on, for example, who really highlighted the idea of dualism and dualistic thinking and this black and white idea that everything can fit into one of two categories.
Right.
And human beings are complex. We've talked about that
reality
a million times.
Reality is complex.
Yeah.
Situations are complex. Goodness gracious, man. Like, dude, it's just... And by the way, like, politically, I would say that, like, this is one thing that, like, I can honestly say it's just as bad on both sides. So no matter what side you find yourself on, like, centrists and moderates mm-hmm. are the most annoying people to everyone else in the world right now. Centrists and moderates. People that are like, well, like, how often do you meet somebody and, you know, they're like, oh, I'm, you know, a Republican, and you immediately assume they're like a Trumper.
Right.
And they're like, oh, no, I've got this really thoughtful, balanced approach to why I still maintain my, like, Republican stance. And there's this part of you that's like, I want to condemn you right now. Like, I want to find no place
right
for, and it's like, you realize you're paving the way to fascism
right
when you do that. And the same with, I mean, left, you know, people on the left are just as bad.
Like, yeah.
And it's just, it's terrible. Like,
it's extremism on both ends.
It's extremism on both ends, all over the place. And it's social issues too.
Yeah.
It's like, you literally can't talk about anything without the fear of being canceled.
Yep.
And it's like, back to like what we were originally talking about, I think we felt some like early seeds of that, like very early on. Like, I remember being at the church, being in a pastoral function, and having to field phone calls from people that told me they loved me, that told me that I was a heretic and needed church discipline because I had a conversation publicly with Rob Bell.
Wow.
And I'm like, listen to yourself. Listen to yourself.
Yeah.
What is going on? What is that? What is going on that you need to be that extreme? What is happening?
There's some arrogance with that too, though, because that presumes that you know for a fact the nature of God to the extent that that they would feel comfortable condemning you with absolute certainty.
Oh, man.
You know what I mean? Like, that's saying
it,
that, like,
it shows me a little bit about, and this is like,
no flexibility.
Oversimplification, and this is completely unfair, but like, it's also just emotive, and like, it's how it makes you feel.
Yeah.
It shows me a little bit about like what the texture and the shape and the form and the character of the God that you think you believe in is.
Right.
If you're somehow like doing this on his behalf, like, you think that he has no space for anybody to have uncertainty or journey or a different opinion or a different way of saying it, for crying out loud.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
So basically what you're telling me is like, we're always on a knife's edge.
Right.
And the eternal abyss of everlasting darkness and eternal conscious torment is I'm one slippery step away. It's not even a slippery slope.
Well,
there's
all
no slope. It's just an edge. And we're all about to fall off.
God's very moody though, Adam.
Do you remember when we interviewed Rob Bell? And I don't know if this was actually on the podcast, but I remember in that back room that made it onto that documentary.
Oh yeah. Yeah. The Heretic.
Yeah. The Heretic documentary. And I said, like, one thing that I love about you, it's not even a content thing.
Mm-hmm.
You just never seem like you're afraid or worried when you're making content. It's not out of fear.
That.
It's not out of shame. It's not out of guilt. It's like this kid with an art kit that's just like having fun and painting and playing and exploring. And that was something that was so missing from the... And I don't mind naming names because I'm not trying to be derogatory, but from the old John Piper books that I read, or the Mark Driscoll kind of crap that I grew up with, you know, in my early 20s, or even Tim Keller, and we respectfully had him on the podcast and loved our conversation with him.
It was great.
He was super just...
We took more heat for that podcast than we did anybody else.
Which proves our point. We took more heat from our listeners for having Tim Keller on our podcast, which was a great podcast.
Yeah.
Super good content.
He was so gracious.
Because he wasn't exactly what everybody wanted him to be, or they found flaws in him that they found unacceptable. I was like, well, we need to get John Piper on here, for crying out loud. I mean, let's get Driscoll on. The only reason we didn't have Driscoll on is because we had a no asshole policy.
That's true. We did. And we still do.
And the dude got fired.
Dude got fired.
For being an asshole.
Yes, he did. Yes, he did.
But otherwise, I actually would have loved to see where that would have went. I just think it would have probably contradicted our two policies, which was no debate and not a lot of space there for.
Yeah.
But that's why people need to give Tim Keller props.
Yeah.
Because, like, look at the... I remember what he tweeted. Yeah. I just had, like, he said something like, I just had a wonderful conversation with two deconstructing guys that wanted to nerd out about philosophy and theology.
I totally forgot about that.
And give it a listen. He put the link to our episode on his Twitter.
Could not have been nicer.
All of these people started listening to us because Tim Keller was like, listen to these guys.
Yeah. I'll never forget the point that he made in our interview with him was that as conservative as some people might, you know, say that he is, and there's some truth to that for sure.
100%.
But like, he makes space within his service, in his church, for people to ask questions and to have doubts. And I remember we looked at each other, we're like, what?
Oh, man.
You do what?
It was so great.
People, I mean, there are definitely pastors and congregations and churches that could learn a thing or two from that, you know?
Totally, man.
Like, he's always been gracious.
That's what I've always loved about him.
Yeah.
He's intellectual.
Yeah.
In that he is always considering new ideas.
Yep.
And even though maybe his like core theology hasn't changed much, he literally said, if you look back 10 years and you haven't moved, that's probably not a good thing. He was talking about how doubt is like, I think he called it like the antibodies of good thinking. Like, you have to have doubt. If you have too much doubt, that's like immune dysregulation and you have a disease and it's going to attack your organs. And, you know, like if you have too much immunity, too much inflammation. But if you don't have any, then that's called brainwashing.
Right.
And it's called, again, we're back to like, you know, fascism, and that's not good.
No, it's not healthy.
Belief by proxy.
Yep, exactly. It's still happening.
Yep.
Should we take a break? Let's take a break. Adam and I are going to take a break. This is perfect because then I can cut this spot in the middle for ads because we have those now.
Fantastic. You do. That's right.
Occasionally. Yeah. Occasionally.
Yeah, good for you. Yeah. You got
to
do that.
I try to be selective, you know,
hey, man.
Yeah.
These mics don't pay for themselves.
Exactly. So we'll take a break. We'll be right back and we'll probably sample more bourbon.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Get this one peated whiskey that literally smells like my dad's garage. And I love it.
Speaking of old garages, and we're back. So Adam has been feeding me scotch, and I was not a scotch fan, admittedly, even when we were in Scotland. So
to my dismay,
I don't know if the listeners who met up with us are still listening, but if you are, thank you. And I have since changed my tune. This very evening. Yes.
So good.
So Scotland's a beautiful country, first and foremost. Can't wait to go back. But Adam, so one of the things I wanted to talk about was, believe it or not, we, I believe, started in 2016. So we are kind of the OGs of this whole deconstruction thing, even though like
we were definitely the first podcast that had it in our title.
That's true.
Which we had no idea how many listeners that was going to create just by way of people just Googling the word and being like, oh, there's a podcast about it. Oh, I'm going to listen to it.
Yeah.
Not knowing what raging amateurs we were.
I know it's sad, but I'm like, don't please, if you're going to start, don't start at the beginning.
Right. It's like, you get to hear us fanboy out because we literally didn't think anyone was listening.
Yeah. And then we kind of fell into kind of a rhythm, probably, I don't know, maybe like around episode 10 or so, I think is when we started to use, and that was all you, by the way. I don't know if you remember, but we had reached out to a band that you really liked, and they really didn't do interviews, but they were like, yeah, go ahead and use our music. And
Sunlux? So you did.
Yeah. Sunlux.
Sunlux. Oh man. What a cool group.
Yeah. And you were doing the editing at the time. So you just kind of like stuck some of their music, some of their songs into an episode and it sounded great. And then people were like, hey, this is really cool.
Yeah, that was fun.
And so we kind of fell into this habit of reaching out to musicians and using music from then on. So like, I credit you.
No. So like, I'll take a little of the credit for like, oh, this would be kind of fun and like, you know, blah, blah, blah. But like the follow through, bro, 100% on you. Like,
it was fun though, man. Like it was just this thing that I think set us apart that was a little unique probably where, you know, we've kept a Spotify playlist for years.
You've kept a Spotify playlist for years.
True. Until recently where I was like,
you're so modest.
This
man.
Is so much work, you know,
you're so modest.
And Clay, you know, Clay, our friend, wrote an EP on deconstruction. I was like, theme music much easier.
Claymation.
Claymation. Jars of clay.
So many jars of clay.
So many good ideas for his band name that he didn't take. That's fine. It's fine, Clay.
It really is, looking back though, so much has happened around that word.
Mm-hmm.
That word.
Yeah.
Like, I remember even like being a little bit taken aback by people that did not want people to deconstruct or were kind of anti or, you know, maybe conservative or what, you know, whatever the label that works to describe what I'm trying to describe. But like, they didn't like that. And it's like, oh, it's scary. Like, you know, don't do that. It's a faith crisis. It's, you know, slippery slope to atheism. You know, you're going to hell in a handbasket.
Mm-hmm.
But then also like, do you remember like how kind of turned off like Rob Bell was about it when we sort of talked to him?
Yeah.
Like he didn't like that. He didn't want, because he thought it meant destructive.
Right.
And he didn't like, he felt so good about what he was doing that it should have been still within the stream.
Mm-hmm.
And deconstruction sounded so like, it's always about just taking it apart.
Yeah.
And I remember when we had an epiphany and we like added the parentheses.
Yeah.
That Rob Bell recommended to like put the D in parentheses to soften it a little bit and at least add some like doubt to the fact that like it's really about the journey of the process. And sometimes that means you feel like you're taking it apart.
Right.
But sometimes it means you feel like you're kind of piecing it back together.
The construction part. Yeah. Right.
The reconstruction.
Yeah. Yeah. There were a handful of people, as
even
I remember.
Richard Rohr.
Yeah. Rohr was kind of opposed to it.
He was like, oh yeah. I mean, he had his three buckets, right? Like,
yeah.
Order, disorder, reorder.
Yeah. Yeah. He was kind of opposed to it. I remember, Bradley Jerzak,
Zond.
Yeah. Like we had to kind of almost like, preface the entire conversation on the fact that like, here's what we mean by it.
And then they're always like,
not mean destruction.
Oh
yeah.
Well, that's great. That's totally like where I'm at. It's like, well, yeah, we know, but like that's right.
Yeah.
Right.
And I think that's still true, especially now. I think there's clearly just a billion podcasts out there now about this sort of thing that didn't exist when we first started, when we first entered into the game, so to speak. You know, there was us, There were the liturgists. There were a handful of others, and now like it's so saturated. But like with varying degrees of, I think, an understanding of what that word means, or like different variations of, you know, interpretation.
Yeah,
and I think I do think a lot of them, the younger folks, because we're old now, we're the OGs. We're plus 40. There are a lot of folks who are obviously still coming out of that kind of, I don't know, almost harmful theological background.
Sure.
Who are in their 20s, in their 30s, and who are rightfully angry. And like, I will never kind of rob them or attempt to rob them of the anger that they feel and the disappointment that they feel.
Yeah.
Because it's justifiable, right?
100%, man.
All I'm saying is we've been through that. We're a little further down the road. And all we're saying is like, look, like there's a way to do this without being spiteful, without being jaded. Like there's a time to be angry, but you can't hold on to it. And that's the only thing I've tried to say for a very long time. It's like, all right, you have every right to be angry. You have every right to be pissed off about that experience that you had, that kind of harmful theology that you were a part of for a while. But like, there's a way to say that was then, and that was where I was at then, but that's not where I'm at now. And I can recognize it for what it was. Like Richard Rohr says, you know, I have a goad to kick against, mm-hmm, you know, mm-hmm. It provided me that structure that I can push off from. And say like, okay, that's not where I am now.
Mm-hmm.
But like, it gave me the foundation to say, okay, like, how could we even begin to ask questions unless we have some sort of foundation like that?
100%, man. I think there's that really great Nietzsche quote where he says, he who fights too long against dragons becomes a dragon himself, or some version of that. Like, be careful when you're fighting dragons that you don't become one.
Yeah.
And I think that there's so much to that. You look at like, even like the, you know, mythology, like, you know, one of the, you know, American myths, you know, the Star Wars, it's like, is Luke going to become just like Darth? You know, be very, very careful when you're fighting against something, that you're not actually becoming the negative, becoming the embodiment of what you're fighting against. So like, how many times did you and I have offline conversations about people that we saw going through what they called quote unquote deconstruction, that was just a new version of fundamentalism?
Yep.
That they were now passionate, and it had the same texture, mm-hmm, and it had the same shape, and it had the same kind of vitriol and the same sort of arrogance. And we would all be like, we would always talk about this and be like, that is not what we want. In fact, we want to caution people against, oh my gosh, you've just woken up from feeling abused by somebody that lorded certainty and certitude over you. Be careful that you don't become or try to become the new taskmaster of a new kind of gospel or way or something, that you become the one with all the answers. Don't do that. Stop needing to do that. I loved that. I think it's probably one of our most unpopular episodes, and it's a shame because it was with our guy, Pete Rollins, where we did his experiment in criticism.
Mm.
And we talked about C.S. Lewis, and we talked about the last guru and the need for people to always have a guru and to, you know, at the time that we launched the podcast, we saw all these people that were repenting of Mark Driscoll for Michael Gunger.
Yeah.
And, or repenting of Mark Driscoll for Rob Bell.
Mm-hmm.
And it was if it doesn't sound like Rob Bell, I don't want anything to do with it. And it's like, don't you realize what you're doing? Don't you realize how this is going again mm-hmm. for you? I'm not telling you to go. I think Driscoll's books were terrible. Mm-hmm. I'm not telling you to go back to them, but you don't need to find a new it.
Right.
You need to, like, the reason I like Richard Rohr is because there's in Everything Belongs that I have now learned, in like, we talk about how this started 6 years ago, and like one of the things that I've seen in myself that I didn't have probably back then that I have now that I think is really, really cool and beautiful, and I hope to pass off to my kids and maybe even anybody else who's open mind that's around me that's interested in spiritual things and spirituality and the divine and things like that, is I used to think that I could only interact with spiritual ideas and concepts from spiritual mediums like books, sermons, churches, classes, whatever. And now I'm like, oh my gosh, I can read this book on architecture.
Mm.
Or I can read this book on, you know, cooking or, you know, whatever. Like, there's this spiritual dimension that's gone so much deeper because I didn't need to localize it to one brand anymore, to one figurehead anymore, to one proxy anymore. And like, just like in the Gospels, when the curtain tears and, you know, there's nothing back there because the whole it's the temple is not the thing. The whole thing is supposed to be the thing.
So God doesn't live in the temple?
He doesn't live saying? Behind the big curtain. Pay no attention to the man behind the curtain.
That's right.
You start to see it everywhere. And when you start to see it everywhere, it's kind of like when it becomes real for the first time.
Yes.
And if that's like not a born-again experience, then like I don't know what is. So stop thinking about like this as a thing that exists among other things, but this is like a better thing. And like, you know, you can learn about God or theology or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And that's high. And then there's like all these other things you can kind of learn about. But it's like, no, like when I read psychology, I'm reading about God. When I read about business, economics, like it's all about the one thing, always.
Of course.
Wish you could have told me that in my 20s.
I mean, in a way, in a sense, that's something that's one thing that hasn't changed since we started this. That this idea that the divine is everywhere.
Yeah.
You know, and like sometimes I remember us talking about the fact that, you know, if you live in a place, because we had a lot of people who reached out initially who were like, where can I connect with a community of like-minded believers? And like, unfortunately,
good luck with that.
I don't have an answer for you on that one. But sometimes the right answer to that is like, you're going to hang out with a community of people who may not all be Christians, but are people who are safe, who are people who will listen to you, who will accept you, who will allow you to ask these questions. And maybe that's in a coffee shop.
Yeah.
And maybe that's your church for the time being. Because sometimes, like, I'll be honest, you know, my friends who are non-Christians are more Christian to me.
100%, man.
Than my Christian friends.
Oh, yeah.
Who are more Jesus-like than my Christian friends.
Jesus prophesied about that.
Yeah.
You know, at the end of Matthew, when he's separating the sheep from the goats and they're all confused, and he's talking about, you know, these people come to him at the end and he's like, you know, I don't know who you are. And they're like, what are you talking about? We did all these like things and we did them in your name. And we were like, yeah, Jesus, like I got this power and I did miracles and like blah, blah, blah. Led Bible studies. I got a mega church, you know? And he's like, yeah, like, but like, I literally don't, none of that was actually like my stuff. And They're like, well, then what, like, what do you, like, where? And he's like, well, you know, I was in prison and you didn't come to see me. Like, I was just hungry and, like, you didn't feed me and I needed a coat and you didn't give me one and I was thirsty and you didn't. It's just people. Just being, like, it's just around. It's just ordinary. It's just good.
Yeah.
It's goodness. It's beauty. It's truth. It's just there.
So let's natural transition to end this episode together, which, by the way, has been beautiful.
So beautiful.
I love it. So 6 years later, however long it's been, deconstruction, our very first episode is what is deconstruction? So what now is deconstruction to you?
Man. Okay. It's probably going to be a long answer.
Bring it.
I'm going to rant a little bit.
Go for it.
So one of the things that I've seen a little bit is that there's still this fear and hesitancy. I saw, you know, a megachurch pastor recently, somebody like tagged me on Twitter, sent me a tweet or whatever about, you know, this megachurch pastor ranting about deconstruction being a sexy craze or whatever.
So you did understand my tweet.
Yes, I did. I understood.
Okay.
And it's somebody that I would have listened to before my deconstruction and considered, like, you know, somebody that I would have looked up to. Mm-hmm. And just the lack of understanding and the quasi, like, fascism and fear and just, like, I tell you what things mean. I shame you into getting into line. I make you question your eternal destiny to the point that it tortures you so that you stay here and do what I tell you to do. The authoritarian, irresponsible, toxic, man, people don't get it. They don't get it. And so when you say, like, 6 years later, I guess what I would have hoped and, like, what it all still means to me is that there's no way to nail it down. There's no way to say. It's not a thing. It's a space. It's an always unfolding. It's a here but not yet. It's a tomorrow I'm going to be a different person. I am not a being, I'm a becoming. It's if you literally feel the same way about life that you did 6 years ago, I'm not judging you, but I do feel sorry for you because that means the vista has not expanded. That means the perspective has not shifted. That means the interpretive tools have not grown and developed. That means the questions have not been asked. That means the doubts have not been confronted. That means the experiences have not taken you to places of instability where you don't need to know what faith really is. Because if you're all good and you're always all good, then you don't know what faith is. And so deconstruction to me is always going to be this beautiful space where people grow and where they're honest about it and where they kind of even desire it and where they're tired of being shamed when they're experiencing it. And I just hope, I don't even hope, man. It's not even a hope. It's an absolute knowledge in a giggly kind of, like, this is something that's always been. It's something that's always going to be. And it's the empire building control freaks that don't want to acknowledge that in themselves or anybody else because they want to be Caesar.
Mm.
So make a mess. Make a mess. And let me give you a really practical example that doesn't fit well in a theological rant. One of the most impactful places that quote unquote deconstruction has impacted my life is as a parent. I didn't used to have a great relationship with my 10-year-old son.
Mm.
We've always loved each other, but like, man, we butted heads and it was stressed and it was strained. And I had this moment one morning where I was meditating and journaling and thinking about it, and it was causing me a lot of pain and fights with my wife and things of that nature. And man, he's such an honest, amazing kid that just wants to, like, he wants to make his own choices. He doesn't want to just be told what to do. He wants to choose. And I wouldn't give him the dignity of that choice. I was always trying to tell him how to do things, what to do, how to do it, how to say it. Like, you know, I was very, very controlling, and I didn't realize it because I thought that's what parenting was. Like, this has to do with deconstruction because that's the way I was raised in my religion and in my faith. And of course that translated into my parenting. So I was very rigid. And here I am running a podcast about deconstruction and telling everybody it's okay to do whatever you want. But like, I won't let my child make a decision on what coat to wear or what to do with your free time. Or like, I don't trust his decisions at all. And I had this moment where I just felt, and yeah, I'll use the word because I'm not afraid of it. Like, I felt convicted. Hmm. And I almost felt God saying to me, am I like that? Am I controlling? Have I ever been controlling? Look through the pages of this thing we call the Bible, whether it's true or not. If I'm anything like this in here, I've always let things be a mess. Knowing that if it's not a mess, you don't actually get to participate. And love requires participation. So here I am with my son as a control freak, and I see God as this great allowing presence. And I deconstructed in a practical way where I realized that the controlling pastors and churches and institutions gave me a controlling God that was not in my experience of history, not in my experience of reality, not even my experience of whatever we call scripture, not in my experience of freaking anything. There's never been, like, how can you call that control? Like, there's nothing controlling unless you add in it a controlling interpretive narrative to the whole thing. So, like, here I am being controlling with my son. And I feel this, like, well, that's you, buddy, because that's not me. From God. And I literally just wept.
Hmm.
And filled my journal with pages of thoughts and stopped. And from that moment, my son and I have had this spectacular relationship where he knows that, like, now if we're going somewhere and it's like, oh, it's below zero outside, well, you need to take your coat, buddy. Well, I don't want to take my coat. Okay, then don't, and live with the consequences. Do what you want to do. I got your back. I'm never going to let anything bad happen to you as best I can, but I want you to have the dignity of choice and responsibility. So do what you want to do. And there's been times where literally, like, it's funny because he hates wearing coats. He'll be like, I should have worn a coat, Dad. I'm like, yeah. Yeah. Small thing, but like,
yeah.
I don't feel like eating breakfast. Okay, don't. You're going to be hungry later. Oh, we'll see. Yeah, I was hungry later. Yeah, but you figured it out. I didn't have to be the control freak.
Yeah.
So, like, that's one. We always talk about deconstruction in terms of ideas and theology and interpretation. It's become so much more to me than that. It's become this open and opening vista that just keeps making me realize that, man, I'm a judgmental asshole about everybody. And that judgmentalness doesn't allow me to be very loving. And like, I just want to have more space for people, man. I want to have more space for people. And I don't need them to be at this place or this place or this place or this place or this place. Whatever. Because like being judgmental, it makes you so bitter.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you ask me like, what does deconstruction mean to me? It's all these things. It's people getting bitter, and it's control, and it's the rage against control, and it's so complicated. But it's beautiful. And I'm glad that we got to have our little piece of this conversation. What about you?
Me too, man. Yeah, I think about it most often when people are reticent to use the term, where they think it's negative. And I think, no.
Oh, yeah.
You just misunderstand what this is.
Ugh.
And so like, I don't know how many times I've said like, look, okay, I'm not married to the term.
I could care less about
you
the term.
You can call it whatever you want. The
term was given to us.
Right. You can call it deconstruction and really make the philosophy students angry.
Oh, they get so angry.
So mad.
You didn't even read Derrida. You don't know what's going on. It's like, dude.
For the record.
Dude, please stop. I'm not talking about that.
Nothing but respect for Derrida.
We right? love Derrida.
Derrida would probably be totally okay with this, by the way. Having said that, though, like, you can call this whatever you want. You can call it a spiritual journey. You can call it, I don't care.
Dark night of the soul.
Right. Label it however you want.
Whatever.
But what it is not a phase. What it is part of the process. It's an ongoing part of the process.
Mm-hmm.
And the sooner that we realize this, the easier it will be, because when you see it as a phase, then you immediately, your gut reaction is to buck against it, I think.
Yeah.
Or at least for some people.
Trend.
Yeah, yeah.
A phase or a trend.
Because there's shame attached to that.
Oh, yeah, man. Oh, you're just doing what all those trendy kids are doing.
Right. Oh.
It's just cool.
You'll get through it, you know?
It's just, oh, I've been through that.
Yeah.
Don't you love it when people are like, oh, yeah, I've been through that. And you know, just by the way that they're saying it, that they're just trying to like get a little street cred with you so that they can tell you that you're wrong.
Do you know who that reminds me of? That one lady on that one documentary that we were on. Very nice. I'm sure she's very nice, but it was like,
oh, that was so awful.
Yeah. We may or may not have been on a documentary one time where like there was somebody who obviously was very much against the idea of deconstruction or asking questions.
It was Alyssa Childers, man. I don't care. I totally don't care.
Yeah. So it was.
I went on my like faith journey and now I'm a completely literalist, fundamentalist.
Yes, it was like this disingenuous
person that tells everyone how wrong everyone is but me and everybody that agrees with everything that I say.
Yeah.
Because I went through deconstruction and now I have everything figured out.
But like, did you?
Dude, I'm telling you, that's why I don't care anymore. I don't pull punches anymore. Like that, I would love to have.
Because it's super unhelpful.
I would love to have a wonderful conversation with Alyssa Childress and say to her, I literally love you and mm-hmm. don't even care that you think that you are telling me I'm wrong mm-hmm. because I fundamentally know that you don't understand what I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And the only thing that I would want to say to you, that's suspect to me is it seems like now you have it all figured out.
Right.
Well, that's great. And that's huge. And I don't think that you can fully appreciate how huge that actually is. Because yeah. Nobody has it all figured out.
And like,
and you're really critical of anyone that doesn't agree with you.
And anyone who thinks they have it all figured out, like I can use Google and within 5 minutes, probably shred half of your arguments. And not like, and I don't say that in the way that like I want to have that intellectual exercise, but like there's so much depth and so many things that we think we take for granted that we understand, that we think to be fact.
Right.
So many things I grew up with that I thought were just fact. And then I did just a tiniest bit of research.
And you're like, oh, that's interpretation.
Right. Or theory.
Or theory.
And it's like, you know, it's like one of our favorite, we were talking about this before we started recording, one of our favorite guests we've had on, Rabbi Art Green.
Oh, Arthur Green.
Arthur Green, who talks about
radical Judaism.
Yes. Who
student of Abraham Joshua Heschel.
Damn straight he was.
Oh, the Hesh.
He dropped that one just like subtly.
Radical amazement.
And we're on our podcast and we're talking to him. He's like, yeah, I was studying under Heschel. We're like the Heschel?
Abraham Joshua Heschel? AJ?
He's like, yeah. We're like, okay. What?
Oh.
Okay.
Oh. John, pause the episode.
Yeah. I got to freak out real quick. But like, as he says, like, shoot, now you threw me off. There's a point to be made here.
You're going to find it.
Oh, but what he talks about, like the idea of, thinking that you've cornered or understood God in any sense. And as soon as you think that you've got God figured out, you know, God surprises you in a completely different way.
Man, it's just, for anybody that's still listening and to us ramble on this long, thank you for sticking with us. But if you've stuck around this long on this episode and you're still listening to me right now, then I literally want to tell you, and this is for you, where you're at is awesome. Accept it, internalize it, hug it, welcome it, give thanks for it, wherever you're at. Be like, this is great. This is great. But don't stop. Don't stop. Leave it open. Leave it open for more exploring. Because that will make you somebody who can listen, empathize, see something from somebody else's perspective. I think of, we would not have the theology of Thomas Aquinas if he hadn't read Aristotle.
Yeah.
We would not have so much beauty if others hadn't been open to others to gain new insights and communicate new ways of seeing and thinking and feeling to us. So listen to those around you. Be okay with where you're at and be okay with where you're going. You're swimming in forgiveness. You're swimming in grace. The whole thing is a miracle. The whole thing. So just enjoy. That's the thing, man. Enjoy it. I think the one thing on the negative side of deconstruction that you and I have tried to do a pretty good job of staying away from is anyone that was coming at it from like a crusader.
Yes.
Sort of vantage point of like, we need to take the power back. Don't fall into that trap, man. That is literally the trap. Go read Animal Farm.
George Orwell?
Yes.
Yeah.
Go read Animal Farm and see how that works out. Right. Everyone needs to do that. Mm-hmm. Anytime you think that you are going to be the one to align yourself with anybody that's even saying like, oh, we're gonna figure it out. we're going to, we've mm-hmm. got the new path. We've got the new way. We've got the new answer.
Yeah.
And there have been some movements in podcasts and people
yeah.
that have set themselves up as those things. And I just want to tell you, like, fine, listen, but you don't need to align. You don't need to camp. You don't need to buy in all the way and drink the Kool-Aid. That's, you're just doing it again.
Exactly. Don't listen to us.
Keep going elsewhere.
Right. Yeah. I think the one thing that has held true for me in this entire time, and my viewpoints have changed, and you know, I'm more than willing to talk to people about those on the side, but like the one thing that hasn't changed for me is the fact that there's I think peace and ambiguity, as Rohr might say. Mm. And I think anything or any theology that doesn't come from a place of love just doesn't feel right to me. And I think I always come back to, regardless of where you stand on the divinity of Christ, doesn't really matter. The teachings of Jesus all come from the same place, right? Like, love yourself, love God, love your neighbor. He boiled it down very simply. He made it very clear, made it very easy. Like the dummy's guide to, you know.
Totally.
And like, I try to follow that the best I can. And that allows me also to embrace people in other religions. Like, I think some of my favorite episodes that we did were some of the religious pluralism episodes. We did some episodes with rabbis. We did episodes with Hindu priestesses.
Sumbul.
She, Muslim.
Yeah, the Muslim next door.
There are... commonalities to be found, you know, and I see them through the love of Jesus and the teachings of Jesus. And I think that, yeah, that's the one thing, that's the one constant for me that hasn't changed this entire time.
Love it, man.
Yeah. Yeah.
There is something bigger.
Mm-hmm.
There is something bigger. There always has been. I like, my wife recently has just been reading through the Gospels and the Book of Acts, and she's just kind of like, hasn't done it in a really long time, and it's just like, you know, I'm going to read some Bible.
Mm.
And when you haven't done it in so long, it's all so weird, right? Well, it's also weird if you're just paying attention anyway, but like, if you haven't done it in a really long time, it's like, man, this is really weird. And like in the early church, like it was growing so fast and including so many groups of people that had before been completely excluded.
Mm-hmm.
They just didn't know what to do because the whole thing was just expanding so fast that at the same time she's doing this, I was reading the writings of Marcus Aurelius. And in Aurelius's writings, he refers to the Christians as the atheists.
Interesting.
Because they were these people that didn't subscribe to the Roman pantheon, and they didn't subscribe to the temple rituals and the whole system that was set up. They were the ones completely deconstructing. And while she's reading Acts and I'm reading Marcus Aurelius, and I'm like, oh my gosh, they're talking about like the same.
Yeah.
And it's like this little overlap. I might have my history kind of wrong there because I'm just, you know, a novice on all this stuff. But like, it's amazing. My point is it's amazing to me the expansive universalistness. Universality is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
Universal, like the bigness, the hugeness. It just keeps expanding and including, expanding and including, expanding and including mm-hmm. until we build walls
100%
and calcify.
Yep.
And say, oh, no, we got it. Now we know exactly what it is. We know how to identify you.
Mm-hmm.
And this is what you should look like. And this is how you should sound. And this is it. If you would have went back to some of those early explosive, expansive gatherings of these people that didn't know what the hell was going on, but they know that they were just overwhelmed by this feeling of like, man, we're all in this together. And there's this thing called the Spirit and Christ. And like, that means that like, no matter what you believe or what I believe, like we all believe that there's this thing that like brings us all together, and it's self-sacrifice and it's beauty and it's love. And it's like, hey, let's do this. Let's like, and they're like, well, hey, do we have to be Jews anymore? Nah, you don't got to do that. Like, well, what about circumcision? I don't know. Maybe sometimes we'll figure that out later. And it's like all of this just like completely. And like, we all look at that as like, oh man, they were nuts. This whole thing. It's like, those were really, really big deals back then.
Absolutely.
And things were just getting blown up. So like, deconstruction has always been, it always will be. Keep the journey going. Love is the answer. Kindness. Come on.
Yeah.
So that, yeah, that's where I'm at.
Beautiful, man.
Thanks for coming over to my house, man.
Thank you for feeding me scotch that didn't taste like a campfire. So Adam and I were in Scotland together a couple years ago, a few years ago now, actually, probably.
I think it's like almost three.
Pre-pandemic. And we went to a private scotch tasting society. And Adam, who got me into bourbon, admittedly tried to feed me scotch, and it all tastes like liquid campfire to me. And so tonight, Adam has given me many scotches that did not taste like campfire. So I appreciate that.
You're welcome.
But and I love you. I love you, brother. Miss you. Thank you for coming on and doing this reunion episode. This will be the first episode of 2022, by the way.
No way.
Yeah.
How cool, man.
This is it. So for those of you who have been around for a while, I hope you enjoyed hearing Adam's voice again. For those of you who have joined after the fact, Adam, hopefully you go back and listen to some of our greatest hits, but Adam and I started this podcast a long time ago with zero intention other than to have some fun conversations. And hopefully do a little bit of good out there. And just got caught up in, I think we said a long time ago, and many times over and over again, that this podcast basically just kind of took off and ran itself.
Yeah, it did.
And
it became what it was supposed to become.
Yeah, I still think that's true.
I do too. You've done an amazing job with it, man.
Thank you, thank you. And I try to keep. I try to honor it and keep it going in the same spirit that we started. So appreciate you and love your brother.
Love you too, man. And I love all you people listening to the Deconstructionist podcast. It's good to be with you again.
Absolutely. All right, guys. Well, happy 2022. Lots more to come. Thank you for listening and God bless all of you.
We did it.
Driven with a heart of gold. Finished seminary, married, found a church he could call home. Made a living, giving dying folks a shoulder and a hand. Until he told his leader that he had some feelings for another man. And they said, John, you must go and take your broken heart and walk it to the door. We know you're go.
the divine. Spent a decade sharing it and kept herself in line until her eyes began to see the light inside the dark. Then the floor of all she thought began to fall apart. And they said, Jen, you must go.
Hey there!
Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.